This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we're going to dive right in today. We have got a jam-packed show.
Jam-packed. Yeah. A lot to get over.
Yes, a lot to get over, a lot to get through. But really exciting start off. We're going to start off with a little culture, a little music, because that's the way we roll around here. We love this. We have got some folks from the McKay Orchestra here to talk about an upcoming event that is going to be featuring someone really very quite cool who is a very established, wonderful musician. We're going to welcome to the show Yair, Maxim, and Kira. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hello.
It's so good to have you. You've got this. It is Bach. And Mendelssohn, Tradition and Transformation. This is coming up in May. So, Yair, why don't you get us started and tell us what you guys have got going on.
Yeah, so I'm a senior, McKay, in our highest level orchestra. And the benefit concert, it provides a lot of the funding for our program.
Oh, okay.
So, example of the fee it helps cover for our music programs is, like, private lessons. And I've personally been part of the private lessons for like 4 years now.
And what instrument do you play?
I play the violin.
You do? Okay.
And having this concert and having people come in and provide funding really helps a lot because, I mean, since my freshman year, like I said, I've been part of the private lessons and it helped me master my instrument. Because I started at our lowest level orchestra and through these private lessons, I was able to really grow and now I'm part of the highest level.
Okay. So this is a way for the community to help students kind of build their, because music is such a valuable part of an academic career. And you're a senior?
Yes.
Okay. So now the music focusing on this is Bach and Mendelssohn Tradition and Transformation. Tell us a little bit about what that means.
I would say the Tradition and Transformation, I mean, it connects to our culture. Just like, we have a lot of traditions of having like potlucks and just really building a community and not only transforming our abilities and our instruments, but also just transforming the culture that we have. We sometimes at the start of the years, the academic year, we might start quiet with our how we know each other. But as we near the end of the year, we really start to know each other and just like grow.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, Maxim, now I mentioned coming in that you've got a special guest who's going to be performing with you. Tell us about her.
Yeah, Jessica Lee.
Yeah.
She's a concertmaster of the Oregon Symphony, and she was a grand prize winner of the 2005 Concert Artist Guide International. We're really lucky to have her play with us an amazing solo, and it's just like an honor to like have all these
professionals
come down and take an interest in what you guys are doing, because you never know, that may be a path that one of you guys is going to take where music becomes your life.
and we could take a lot from this, and she's really cool, and if you know her, she's really good and a lot of people love her, and the Oregon Symphony, I've heard, love to talk good about her and Glazer and stuff.
So that's cool. So, Maxim, what instrument do you play?
I play the cello.
You do? And you've been doing it now? What year are you in high school?
Junior.
Okay. So have you been doing it since you're a freshman, like Yair?
Yeah. And started at the bottom of the bunk and grew my way up.
So I'm assuming when you guys first started, your parents, when you had to practice, it was a little until you got better?
Oh, yeah.
I played the violin way back in the day, and my parents were, can you go in the barn? So now you're going to be performing for the community.
Yep. And I'm hoping that some people will feel the passion that when we play, they really feel the emotions of each song, because each song has their own like unique feel to it and story, and it's amazing.
Well, yeah, Tradition and Transformation. Yeah, very much so. Kira, so now you're a sophomore?
Yes.
What instrument?
I play viola.
You play what?
Viola.
Okay. And so you've been playing it for about a year and a half, 2 years, or did you start younger?
Well, I started in fourth grade.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. Well, you're an old pro. So what can you share with us about this concert?
What can I share? Well, these amazing trips that we have. Like, we went to Silver Falls. We do this every year where all of the orchestras come together and we take a bus there. Mm-hmm. We had an incident where the bus was too small, but we figured it out.
It's cozy.
It was cozy.
Well, instruments do take up a little space.
They do, yes.
Yeah, the bass just have to be stored under the bus. But when we got there, it was just some beautiful scenery and, like, basically working together as an ensemble on our private pieces. And that was really cool. I got hot chocolate there, and it was really good.
Mm-hmm. That's the big thing that you remember about that. Must have been really good.
Yes. We also, just recently, actually, last weekend, we went to the Oregon coast, for a youth symphony festival with some other, like, isolated schools in the, not even in the area. Like, some of them were down by California, up by Washington. It was everywhere. And it was really cool to see how they play their music. And I got to work with one of the other orchestras because they only had one viola.
Mm-hmm.
So it was me and two others. And we basically sight-read the pieces.
Really?
But I think we did pretty well in spite of that.
So all of you are musicians. So do you feel that, you know, being a musician, playing an instrument has enhanced your life in other ways? Academics? They always kind of say music and math, they kind of go hand in hand. Have you found that? You're making me, Maxim, you're kind of going, well,
not really.
Not so much?
Well, for me personally, I'm in the calculus class, so I think all that pattern recognition.
God bless you. I didn't like algebra, so good for you.
I don't like math either, but I mean, all that pattern recognition that we do from reading the music, it does help.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, so we don't have a whole lot of time with you, so let's go ahead. Let's do some details. This is May 1st, 2026, 7 p.m. You want to fill in some blanks for us?
Smith Auditorium at the Willamette University.
So it's at Willamette. Which is at 2070 Winter Street. And again, for everybody listening, tickets are available at mckayorchestras.com. And for all of you guys driving, I will put all this in show notes and you can click through. You have an auction. We don't need to go into too much detail, but you've got some cool stuff.
Okay, I could talk about that.
Okay.
It's a silent auction, so, and you can get some cool stuff like some, like, just Bath and Body Works, some shampoos, all the way up to, like, a South Africa trip, and, yeah.
See, I'm, like, picking my jaw up. That's just so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to win it. I'm going to bet on that, so don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's the other part of all of the auction stuff is if even if you can't attend, get tickets to the event on May 1st, you can bid in the silent auction online. There is a link over it to mckayorchestras.com.
Yes. And I'll go ahead, and I guess you kind of have to drill down a little deep in that link to get to it. So I'll do that and make sure that that's there. Okay, before we let you go, anything else that people need to know about this great event coming up and why they should go?
It'll also be live streamed, so even if
you... really?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Even if you really can't go physically to the concert, you'll still be able to look at it through a live stream.
Okay, that's nice. Go ahead, Kara.
And all proceeds actually benefit our school. So anything that we get from there benefits our orchestra program, some of our band program, and it really helps fund all of these fun adventures and experiences that we get to have.
I love it.
So again, 7 p.m. at Smith Auditorium at Willamette University.
May 1st.
On May 1st, May Day 2026.
Yep.
And I'm sitting here kind of going, it's something totally worth going to. Or at the very least, checking out that silent auction. And, you know, maybe I'll compete with Denise for that Africa trip.
Yeah, good luck. But again, you know, Bach and Mendelssohn, Tradition and Transformation. And again, featuring the Oregon Symphony's Jessica Lee. Yair, Maxim, and Kira, you guys did great. Thanks for coming in.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, best of luck. And here's to cha-ching, lots of money being raised. All right, we're going to take our first break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Like I said, we got a jam-packed show. We're going to jump right now to the phone lines. Joining us from Florida, Jeff Reynolds. He is the senior editor at Restoration-News.com, senior investigative researcher for Restoration of America. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, well, I think you heard we had those great kids from McKay from the orchestra. That's going to be so. I love that we can support stuff like that.
That is awesome, and those kids were really sharp. It appealed to me because my daughter plays cello. So I'm kind of jealous that they get to have all these opportunities, but she's got her own opportunities too.
Did you hear about the South Africa trip that they're auctioning off? You can bid on that from Florida. Wait, no, you can't, because I'm going to win it.
Don't do that. Get the Bath and Body Works stuff instead. Yeah, they can ship it to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, so like I said, Jeff is he's a regular guest on our show. We have him at least two times a month, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. And Restoration News. I heard one of your guys was on. Whose show was he on? One of the Nationals too. I forget who.
Oh yeah, no.
Was it Glenn?
We've been getting a lot of national media hits lately. Our CEO Doug Truax has been on Fox News and Newsmax quite a bit.
Yeah.
Also, our social media gal Grace Riley has been on Newsmax, and she's going to be on again this weekend.
Excellent.
We got a lot going on.
Excellent. Very good. Well, I'm glad that we've got you for usually about an hour twice a month. One of the big stories that we're following, obviously, was what was happening in Virginia. And then the plot thickens because now there's a challenge to it. There's a story out at restoration-news.com. Headline, Virginia Democrats rewrote the rules, rushed the clock, and gerrymandered the map. Now the state Supreme Court will get the final say. Good. Maybe.
Yeah. it sure seems like a positive. I mean, obviously, you never know how the legal proceedings are going to play out.
Right.
But there were several ways, half a dozen different ways in which they violated Virginia's constitution just to get this stupid thing on the ballot.
Yeah.
So there are lots of avenues for challenge. So there are, I think, two or three different lawsuits being filed against it in different courts. County courts. It'll probably get fast tracked to the Supreme Court because this is going to affect the primary election. So they need to adjudicate this quickly. What really struck me about this is, and this is gerrymandering all of the congressional maps in the state of Virginia. So currently there are 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans representing a very purple state in Washington, D.C., in the House of Representatives. They rewrote the maps to make it highly likely that 10 Democrats and only 1 Republican will get elected in these newly drawn districts. And so that obviously disenfranchises a whole bunch of voters when, you know, 40 something percent of Virginia voters are Republicans and they get 9% of the representation in D.C. So but what really struck me was the language that they put on the ballot, that it's temporarily going to restore fairness to the maps. But it's going to go back to normal in 2030. Well, if it's unfair, why only make the fairness temporary? It didn't even make any sense.
It doesn't.
That I saw that picture on social media. I'm like, is this really the way they worded this question?
It is.
In the voters. Oh, my goodness.
It's like we were talking yesterday. Whoever defines the terms, it's like, oh, it's fair. Well, fair to who?
Right. And why is fairness only temporary? They undermined their own argument.
And then I'm looking at the map right now, and it's like the way it's been, it's squeezed down in like all districts. They all have to go to Alexandria, and it all squeezes down where everything is there. And it's all this big blue blob.
It's very much like Oregon, where 5 of the 6 districts have to touch Portland, right?
Yep. Ridiculous. Yeah,
that's what you get with one party rule.
Well, and it's funny because I have family that live in Virginia, and I know a number of them would not have voted for this. But then there's others that were like, let's go, Virginia. We're going to do this. And it's like, well, good luck with that, hun. So I've been keeping an eye on it. And then, of course, you've got Spanberger out there saying that this needs to go national.
Right. Well, Spanberger is not in any position to talk about things that are likely to be popular on a national scale because she's rapidly become one of the least popular governors. She's right down there with Tina Kotek as least popular governors in America.
Wonder if they they chit-chat over social media and lament the fact that nobody likes us.
No, they figure social media is a lie. Everyone likes them. Yeah. They just don't know it yet.
Crazy. It's really just crazy. Well, you know, switching gears, I want to, oh gosh, I've got so many tabs open, Jeff. There's a poll, and I know you've been following, obviously, what's happening in Oregon. So speaking about, you know, unpopular governors, it would seem like this is the year to finally be rid of Kotek. She's been lurking and doing her damage around this state for far too long. You've been kind of keeping an eye on things, watching any forums, anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit. It seems like every year is the year to kick out an unpopular Democrat, except that, you know, somehow it never comes together in the state of Oregon between vote by mail and voter rolls that they refuse to clean up to one party rule and the judicial system being completely dominated by the left for 30 years. You know, it's very hard for Republicans to break through. And I saw that poll that came out yesterday with Christine Drazen leading the pack.
Yeah,
by,
that's
a significant margin.
Yep.
Yeah. And it strikes me, I mean, you know, both, and Christine's a nice enough gal.
Sure,
I've met
nice.
Her a few times.
Yeah, me
know?
Too.
I met Dudley when he ran the last time, you know, in 2010. And I don't know Ed Deal at all. I left before he rose to prominence. And I know Danielle a little bit. You know, it seems from an outsider's perspective here that the Republican base has failed to gather any sort of enthusiasm in the primary here. And it's sort of going to Christine by default because she's running probably the best campaign and has the most money.
And the name recognition from 2022.
And then that's right. And even Chris Dudley, you know, he should have a lot of name recognition as a former pro sports player in the state of Oregon and, you know, ran for governor once before, but that was, you know, let's
16
be honest,
years
that was 16 years ago. Yeah.
I'm looking at the Poly market because I mean, a lot of people are trying to say that, you know, and we know how polls work. A lot of, you know, depending on who will push it out there is like, well, that's all she wrote. It's all settled and done. Everybody just get behind this individual.
And that's what I'm seeing on social media.
That's what I'm seeing
that
too.
Thing literally being pushed out there left and right by everybody on social media as pretty much a Drazen's one. Go ahead and just cast your vote for her now.
Yeah. Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, the betting markets, Kalshi and Poly market, they really have Chris Dudley. One has him at 10%. One of them has him at 11%. I talked to a friend of mine who has a 35-year-old daughter who's like, who? So I don't know if he's banking on the name right. recognition and the Trailblazers. I know, Hunter, you said you saw an ad and it's sort of like we're going to rebound. He's using sort of, you know, that the marketing and tagging it that way. But there's a big portion of the electorate that doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, you know, and there's a, I mean, that's pretty telling that I think Dudley could have won in 2010, if not for a variety of factors. One was the vote dump in Multnomah County overnight on election night. But the other was that he didn't run a very strong campaign with a lot of strong policy stances. And I don't see a heck of a lot of difference this time around either.
Nope.
And you would think with 16 years of hindsight, he would have come up with a stronger message and a stronger value proposition. And I'm kind of disappointed in that. You know, so I don't know if he's really got enough runway to break through before the primary. And so we're probably just going to kind of default to Christine Drazen again. And let's hope she can run a better campaign. The other thing with Dudley is that it just recently came out that he may be switching his stance on abortion, which is a very interesting thing. I don't know if that's going to play with the base at all.
Probably not.
But, you know, he's always described himself as a pro-choice Republican. But I think he's trying to shore up his support among base Republican voters. But time is really short, and I don't know if that's going to come off as authentic.
That's just what I was going to say. That seems a little manipulative if that's the case, because people who are following this will see that which one are you? Was this one true or was that one true?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I don't think the life issue is, I mean, it's going to play in the Republican primary, but overall in the general election in November, it probably won't be a big factor in how the vote goes. We certainly want to see somebody more friendly to the pro-life cause as governor. But, you know, let's be honest on that, too.
Right.
There's not a heck of a lot they can do without the legislature and the courts.
Exactly.
So, you know, the biggest problems facing Oregon are economic and development and infrastructure and, you know, the forest situation and all of that stuff. And nobody seems to be really taking those issues head on.
I have to say, I have seen Danielle Bethel has taken them on mainly because, sorry, she is down here in Marion County, and she did deal with the Sandy M fires and things like that. I believe Ed Deal did as
That's
well.
True. Yeah.
But it doesn't get, and again, she doesn't have the money and the name recognition, really, which is unfortunate. I think she's a good candidate.
Well, yeah, it's what we talk about, is abortion isn't going anywhere in the state of Oregon, even if we elect a Republican governor. So it needs to be something that the Republican candidate in the general election can pretty much sit there and say, I'm not here to take your abortion away at this point.
Right.
That's not happening anytime soon.
Exactly. And so, and then that kind of would take away the Democrats' talking point because they run on it too.
Yeah, but you know what? Well, and of course they demonize any Republican, whether they're pro-life or not, for being pro-life.
Right.
You know, so, but we go back to 2010, you know, Denise, you and I got involved in the Tea Party movement back then.
Yep.
And we were pulling hard for Chris Dudley. And, you know, we've always had these same issues with Republican candidates, that they don't articulate well enough their positions on economic development and turning things around in this state when you've got net out migration every year and all kinds of other problems where we can't develop jobs.
Yeah. All right. Hold that thought. We'll continue our conversation on the other side of the break with Jeff Reynolds. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. We are talking today with Restoration-News.com senior editor Jeff Reynolds, all the way from the sunny, beautiful, free state of Florida. Jealous.
Well, especially the sunny, beautiful. We're getting there. I'm seeing a little more light peeking through the windows.
It's going to be beautiful this weekend. It's going to be beautiful.
It's a little chilly here. It's only 85.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it.
That's after the last couple of days of having raincoats on.
I know. you're having to wear a shirt that's like, what, a longer sleeve shirt?
Yeah. No, it reminds me of Oregon. We've got wildfires all across Florida right now.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very dry winter and very cold. So it killed all the underbrush. So it's all like it's tinder ready to go up. And then we've had, you know, we get the most lightning strikes of any state in the union. So it's a tinderbox right now.
So just, you know, having been in Oregon for so long and seeing how Oregon, I'm throwing up air quotes, manages its forest, how does Florida do?
Florida does way better. Yeah. Our fires don't get way out of control like they do in Oregon because we do controlled burns. Mm-hmm. We manage the underbrush as best we can. You know, every year it's funny, right around February, March, people start complaining on Facebook about how, the air is so smoky and what's on fire. And, you know, well, I come from Oregon and you want us doing this because you don't want to be doing what they do in Oregon in Florida.
So. Don't need to evacuate communities.
No, where you've got blood red skies
right,
during the day.
Them all raised to the ground.
God. I mean, in hundreds of millions of acres, I was hearing somewhere that before 1987, I think there were virtually no fires in Oregon for about 50 years. And then all of a sudden the enviros came in and the spotted owl.
Yep.
And now it may have been maybe a 10,000 acre fire back in the day. And now you're looking at 500,000 to 1 million acres every year.
Yep, that's exactly right. And oh, by the way, even with all of that, even with the massive increase in catastrophic fires that we've seen in the West in particular,
mm-hmm.
Even with all of that, we're still at historic lows for wildfires across the globe, but in, especially in the United States. So the enviros who say that all this is being caused by global warming are completely undercut by actual reality.
Isn't that always the case?
Again? Yeah, again.
I know.
Well, yeah.
Is that breaking news?
Well, and a lot of this, and a lot of this, this comes down to policies, and it comes down to management and who's leading the state. So just to kind of do a segue, just or a pivot, circle back, mind you, circle back, if you will, to talking about the Oregon gubernatorial race and this one poll, and it was commissioned by Nelson Research, and it was a poll published by OPB, and again, just to reiterate it, it shows Christine Drazen with 31.1%, Ed Deal is coming in second at 15.6%, Chris Dudley at 14.8%, David Medina at 6.1%, and then Danielle Bethel at 1.6%. 4 and 5 surprised me.
How do they take polls now? They can't call you. You don't answer your phone.
Right.
So they put these things online a lot of times where you can expect David Medina is going to get a little more attention than probably most of the other candidates would simply because of his online presence.
Oh, but then he only came in at 6.1, but that was significantly higher. My understanding is this poll was taken before the ORP forum, and there was a bump. There was a poll taken after that that showed that the biggest mover in all of that actually was Danielle Bethel. Mm-hmm. But Ed Deal sort of came out as the perceived winner of that. That was a poll, I think, of 110 samples. Size. This one, I think, is 500 and some. Mm-hmm. So that's two polls. And then, Jeff, in the break, you mentioned that Kalshi and Polymarket are not polls. They're betting sites.
That's right. Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack here. Because, yes, you're right. Polymarket and Kalshi are betting sites. So they don't reflect a snapshot in time that a poll is supposed to give you. They give you the betting odds. And usually that can be very accurate. The people in Vegas generally do better than the public in setting the odds. That's why they have made all that money and built all those casinos in Las Vegas. So I tend to take the betting market seriously when they show a trend. Mm-hmm. However, they are not polls.
Yeah.
Polls are a completely different animal. So, and boy, you mentioned that second poll only had a sample size of 110. That's far from scientific or statistically significant. So that you can kind of throw that one out.
Yeah.
But you talked about the original poll. It was done by Nelson Associates, I think you said, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Aren't they a Democrat? If I remember correctly, they're a Democratic polling outfit, aren't they?
That I don't know 100%. I know I've seen some talk about people saying that this outfit did the same poll in 2022 and had similar results. So when you look at how polls are being used to sort of push, nudge, shove people in a different direction, and then the fact that it was published by OPB would tend to make you think probably.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. If it's who I'm thinking of, and it's a Democratic aligned polling outfit, then it's equally likely that they are weighting the results in a way that puts forth the candidate that is least likely to push through in the general election.
Mm. See, and that's what I wonder.
That kind of shenanigans go on all the time with partisan polling outlets.
Well, I just look at it as they, you know, out of the three candidates, four that are the top four, you can literally kind of sit there and say if Christine Drazen is probably the most likely one they feel confident is going to get. Both are, you know, embedded into politics in Oregon, and Christine Drazen lost 4 years ago in recent memory, could definitely make them feel like Ed or Danielle, you're going to get a significant push. And then, of course, Chris Dudley has that the Nike money and other. I mean, he's the leading money getter right now.
Right.
So, yeah, I could see how a Democrat polling site would want to kind of push that idea.
Yeah, no, that's true. But you're right. I mean, she's a proven, I hate to put it in these terms because I think she has a viable shot to win the election in the general. Mm-hmm. But she's a proven loser from the perspective of the Democrats. And maybe they're counting on more of the same in 2026 and eking out another, 5-point win for Tina Kotek and skating along without ever having to really put up a fight.
Or they're counting on what typically happens with Republicans is my candidate didn't win in the primary, so I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home and I'm going to sulk and I'm not going to support who this person is. I'm going to put in a purity test that nobody can meet. And I'm being a little harsh here, but I'm very frustrated with this because I'm seeing a lot of these conversations out on X. A lot of people are calling for unity after this. Whoever wins this primary, put your big girl, put your big boy pants on and get in line and vociferously, full-throatedly go out there and campaign for that person. Because the Republican base in Oregon is not large enough to win a gubernatorial, to win Mahoney a Hall. It just isn't. So you need those NAVs and you need some disaffected Dems.
Well, that's all true, Denise. But also the Republicans who refuse to go out and vote or campaign are also going to hamstring the eventual nominee.
Right.
So we need 100% turnout. But it's up to the candidate to build that momentum.
That's true.
And get their base lined up so that the base will then go out and evangelize and get all their friends, maybe some of whom are non-affiliated or maybe some of whom are disaffected Democrats. And that's how you break through, is by actually showing leadership and building momentum and making people believe you actually have a realistic shot at this thing.
So here, okay, I'm going to jump in because Hunter kind of brought this up because you're talking about an enthusiasm gap.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, seeing a lot of, you know, Ed and Danielle, I think I feel a little more enthusiasm for them than I do for Dudley and Drazen.
Their supporters really love them.
And that's what I see. And like you just said, is I think Drazen, out of the four, even five top candidates, is going to have the hardest time mobilizing the Republican base, especially coming off of the loss of 2022. And, you know, watching the forum, there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm from her, Chris Dudley, where there felt like there was a lot
low
more
energy.
Enthusiasm from Ed Diehl and Danielle Bethel.
Right. And I think that's one of the things we need to take from the whole Trump phenomenon. We don't need Donald Trump hanging over this election in 2026 in the state of Oregon. Yeah. I think that's a net negative for NAVs and disaffected Democrats. But what we internally as Republicans should take from the Donald Trump experience is how to fight and how to show leadership and how to get tough with your opponents. And your opponents are not sometimes your friends, especially Oregon Democrats. They you could pretend all you want that you're collegial inside the halls of the Capitol building, but when you get out into the streets and you get out and to the kitchen tables and you talk to voters, they're out there trashing everything that you do as a Republican. So instead of trying to be their friend, we all need to go out there and differentiate what makes Republicans different and better than Democrats. And we never, ever do that. In my experience, almost 20 years involved in Oregon politics.
Yeah, a little bit of the gloves need to really come off because, again, there is a lot at stake. And just looking at all the economic numbers, commercial real estate, businesses leaving, the doom spiral, all the things that are on the docket right now.
All the stuff we talk about every time.
Every time. That is all out there. And to go out there and to be, like you said, collegial and nice and on my friend across the aisle. Enough of that.
Well, I sit here and I question, is it a leadership issue when it gets down to it? I mean, we saw an opportunity with this forum that had a lot of excitement behind it, and the ORP in a lot of ways dropped the ball. One, starting it a half hour late. Two, didn't get the links out to people. I know people that weren't excited to send them their email address just to get the link, not being able to get this thing on broadcast television. There's a whole lot of dropped balls in there where you sit there and say, is leadership not aiding these candidates in building excitement?
Yeah, you're one of the two major political parties in the state of Oregon, and you can't get yourself on television. The ORP needs to start asking itself the hard questions and stop with all the factional infighting, because that's what's destroyed it since before I left. Starting 2018, 2019, tearing each other down.
Yeah, I can pinpoint exactly when, I think.
We were both there.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were. All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. This is our last break. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds from Restoration-News.com. Bookmark it. It's a great site. We'll be back in a minute. Come on back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
And just so you know, I got myself some Cozy's yesterday. In fact, it was such a big sandwich, I'm having the rest of it today. And I got a number 7.
Okay.
I did not go with the gabagool. It was a last-minute pivot, and I went with roast beef with a little horseradish sauce and some cucumbers, and it was delicious.
You did announce you were going to be there at 1:30. Were there fans waiting for you?
No. At least they didn't let me know. And I was actually 10 minutes late, so maybe I missed them. Maybe I missed them. All right. Okay, Jeff, so one of the stories you guys are covering over at Restoration News is, you know, Washington, Oregon, California, you know, the cows. Abortion is always on the thing. We've been talking about that in the Oregon race for governor. Washington State, though, the headline is Washington's abortion pill free-for-all shatters Dems' choice facade. And this is, so talk to us a little bit about what's in this, because this affects Oregon. This affects the nation in many respects.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's very funny that this is something that contrasts blue states versus red states.
Yes.
And so what we've got here is the prison system in the state of Washington is dumping the abortion pill into the prisons, which they've got this massive stockpile of mifepristone that the state got together for some reason. I don't even know why they did this, but the state of Washington stockpiled mifepristone,
yeah,
the abortion pill,
yeah,
and they have so much of it, and they have to give it away like Easter candy. So they're actually giving it away through the prison system, trying to keep women childless and without nuclear family capability whatsoever.
Wait a minute, is that because it's a women's prison, you shouldn't necessarily have that, or but you're talking like conjugal visits things, or?
Well, so it allows the Washington State Department of Corrections, oddly enough, to distribute its stash of the abortion drug mifepristone to any person in any state without a doctor's visit, fully informed consent, or even payment.
Good grief.
The department was forced to return some 30,000 expired pills originally purchased for about $1.3 million to the manufacturer earlier this year, though it retains about 17,000 doses. The stockpile was a parting gift from former Governor Jay Inslee, ugh, prompted by Democrats fear-mongering, mm-hmm, after the fall of, mm-hmm, Roe v. Wade in 2022.
Oh, Jay Inslee, hey, Idaho, he's your neighbor now.
Did
he move to Idaho?
Yes, he moved.
He moved to Idaho.
Yep. Yeah. So,
wow.
But yeah, virtually what you're saying is, so the Washington State Department of Corrections is a drug dealer. They are sending drugs across the country wherever they are needed.
Yes. And in fact, no doctor's visit needed, no telehealth appointment, no, checking if there are contraindications of other medications, none of that stuff. Right. So blue states have been doing this quite a bit and ramping it up way more after the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade.
So even a red state that has made it illegal, they are circumventing that, and they are sending, you know, like say Idaho, which Idaho has very strict rules against this and a law against this where I believe it is illegal. So Washington
That's
is
exactly
just
right.
mailing them over there to whoever asked for it.
That's exactly right. And there are doctors in, activist doctors in New York State, California, a couple of other blue states that are under active indictment in states like Texas and Louisiana after women were killed by being forced against their will to take the abortion pill, either by some jealous ex-boyfriend or, you know, mother-in-law in one case, you know,
yeah,
stuff like this.
Yeah.
So they're hiding it, you know, mashing it up and hiding it in the girls' drinks and making them ingest it so that they lose the baby. And then they end up dead too. So there are active indictments against these doctors that are doing that, but those blue states have shield laws, which they allow them, require them to refuse to extradite those people for prosecution.
That is insane. In fact, yeah, even there was a study, 11% of chemical abortion patients experience serious side effects ranging from sepsis and bacterial infections, like you said, to hemorrhage or even death. And then if it's being slipped to you by someone who supposedly loves you and you don't even know what's happening, because, I mean, it's pretty awful. And we've talked about how now the fact is that the woman's bathroom now becomes the abortion clinic. You can never escape what has happened there. And then this is disgusting on so many levels. I mean, it makes me sick.
Right. You know, you brought that point up the last time we talked about this, and I had never even considered that. But the idea that how could you even live in that same home
right.
once you've had to go through that experience? I mean, that's why clinics exist, so that this whole thing can be done. You know, any medical procedure can be done in sanitary conditions under the watchful eye of professionals. Instead, you're going through the trauma of that in your own bathroom and having to clean up the mess yourself. I mean, it's horrific what that forces people into.
It's truly horrific. And then again, you've got Democrats doing this, and they're coming out like they're the good guys, and they campaign on this as what, reproductive rights, a medical procedure?
Right. Well, and that's what they do as good little Marxists.
Yep.
The first thing they do is redefine language so that they speak in some sort of a code. It's almost like a talisman, like they're speaking a magic spell.
Well, and we just kind of going back to what we were talking about, Virginia, when we first had you on, fairness and the use of language and the twisting of language. And because I think once mm-hmm. you all, I mean, just look back like Orwell in 1984, Newspeak, war is peace. It's just we're living that right now, literally, where words and the definitions are being changed. Well, how could you be against fairness or a woman's bodily autonomy or her right to choose? What are you?
Right, or gender affirming care.
Affirming care. And so always the use of language, and people who don't dig that deep just knee jerk and go, well, yeah, I guess not.
Yep.
Well,
that's right. Yeah.
It's like IP28, the referendum that's going around here in the state of Oregon,
yeah.
where they're literally telling people this is about, you know, animal rights. We don't want animals just killed and slaughtered.
You don't want to be cruel to animals,
yeah,
do you?
Yeah, no cruelty to animals, but yet there's so much more that now you're not even going to be able to get the pests out of your house.
Right. Or my understanding is that IP28 goes as far as basically making slaughtering animals
yeah.
for consumption
Correct.
Illegal.
Correct.
So no meat.
No meat. Unless I did see a video of somebody questioning one of the petition, because they don't, of course, they don't tell you the whole story when they want you to sign it. It's, you know, well, you don't want
right.
to be cruel to animals, but yes. And so it's like, so you want to force everyone to be vegan? I thought you didn't like it if we forced our religious beliefs on you, but you want to force yours
yeah,
on
what
me.
What happened to my bodily autonomy?
Yeah. You're going to tell me what I can eat?
Right.
Well, your bodily autonomy only counts in certain aspects.
Right.
And certain belief systems.
It didn't count with COVID vax.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
right.
yeah, my body, my choice was completely off the table then.
Yep. And as our article on the Washington abortion pill thing makes clear, that Washington giving out these pills like candy through the Department of Corrections, because they're known for their medical expertise.
Yep. Yep. Well,
it completely shatters the facade.
It really does. I would go out there, bookmark it, restoration-news.com. Jeff Reynolds, always a pleasure to have you on. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.